Que...
Oh, Jesus.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the October 4th, 2021 meeting of the Ulster County Energy and Environment Committee. I can see I'm going to have fun with this cat tonight. I would like to ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Certainly, Manajil Green.
Present.
Mary Wuerow.
Here.
Okay, Mary, we can't see you yet. We're going to have to see you if we're going to vote on anything.
I'm working on it.
Okay. Al Bruno.
Here.
Peter Criswell.
Here.
Laura Petit.
Here. Hi,
Mary. Okay.
Hi, Mary.
You have a quorum of five.
Wonderful. With that, I'd like to ask Legislator Bruno to please lead us in the pledge to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty
and justice
for all. Amen.
Thank you.
Amen.
And has everyone had a chance to read the minutes and the transcript?
I did.
September meeting, yes. September 6th. Can I call for-
I'll make a motion we accept the minutes as transcribed.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, anyone opposed? Motion carries. And Adam, if you would be so kind as to, you know, as we head into budget season, as we've done in the past, we'd like to ask for a little bit of a report, both on the past year and your plans for next year. It doesn't have to be extensive. Really like to keep up with what Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District is doing.
Great. I appreciate the offer.
I'm going to stop you for one moment, Adam. We have a caller at 845-853-9854. Can I get your name?
Yep, this is Victor, Legislative Council.
Oh, hi, Victor. Okay.
Hello.
All right. Go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, first one. Starting. I appreciate the chance to come speak with y'all. So 2021 has been a pretty busy year for us. We're currently involved in about $1 million worth of implementation work throughout the county. That includes both in the agricultural space that we work in, directly assisting some of the producers of the county, as well as with some of the water resource projects that we get involved in the New York City watershed. We currently have two water quality improvement projects underway in Warner Creek, which is a tributary to Stony Clove Creek, which goes into the upper Esopus. So those are directly addressing like erosional contact with the geologic sources that prevent a water quality issue for the upper Esopus, as well as the reservoir and, you know, by its connection, the lower Esopus with the turbid releases that have been coming out of the reservoir at times. That work is maybe 75% done and should be wrapping up with most of the heavy like excavation work by the end of the month. And there's several bioengineering components using live native plant material that are being incorporated, and all that gets installed during the dormancy. So we'll be out there late into the fall and early winter with the contractor getting all that installed. We are in the process of implementing a, let's see here, perimeter fencing, as well as a pipeline and watering facility for one of the producers that has a cattle producer, as well as given them a prescribed grazing plan. And that work totals, I think, just around $50,000, which we were able to provide. It's via our agriculture environmental management funding that we get from the state. And that whole process, you know, is a collaborative process with the producers where we work through a planning steps to identify any resource concerns And then either in-house or in collaboration with our Natural Resource Conservation Service partners, design and implement, provide the funding to implement those projects. We wrapped up a nice big barnyard project last year and are also working on another barnyard improvement project for implementation here in the coming months. Just waiting on some like construction quotes. We've also been in year two of our Hudson Valley Carbon Farming pilot project involvement, which is several of the counties within the mid-Hudson to lower Hudson region, Sullivan, Dutchess, Ulster, Orange, Rockland, and maybe one other. So we were able to implement on-farm practices on a couple of the producers in the county. I've gotten some initial soil results working through the Cornell Soil Lab. And we'll have an opportunity to do some additional soil testing and start to look at what impacts we might be having on carbon storage within the soils based on these practice changes. So it's kind of exciting, similar work I know MANA, this committee, has been aware of and looking to work on throughout the county. So we'll see results from that hopefully sometime next year and then finalize any reports and, you know, certainly be willing to make that available once we have them to this committee. We've also... Before done a lot of assessment. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, so you're actually testing carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas uptake in the soils?
Yeah, looking at carbon sequestration too within the soil. So really looking at those, the carbon sources, organic carbons and things like that, and seeing if the practices, these changes in how they would operate on the farm can actually help lead to carbon retention and sequestration in the soil. And then we're testing for a whole bunch of other things, you know, micro nutrients, things like that too, to see what other changes might happen. But the focus is on carbon storage.
Is that through composting or?
No, it's been like some on-farm like practices, like changes in like tillage, cover cropping, stuff like that. Things that aren't, you know, like kind of tweaks to existing practices, but to make them maybe a little bit more focused on, you know, the carbon issue. So we've worked, I think one of the practices is on one of our orchards, and then we're working with a couple of the vegetable producers throughout the county.
I want to just stress how critically important that is, because yeah, we're doing a lot of work to prevent emissions and to transition to a renewable energy economy. But the other half is bringing the carbon down, the greenhouse gases back down into the soils. And we sometimes forget about that half of the carbon cycle. So I want to acknowledge that. And I know you're probably also working with Cornell Cooperative Extension and Scenic Hudson and others.
Yeah. Yeah, Scenic Hudson's a partner in that pilot. They're doing some of the education and outreach components of it, which we already had one event last fall, you know, via Zoom. And then hopefully there'll be one more as the project's wrapping up. We're trying to do something on one of the farms to demonstrate one of the practices, but it's been a little complicated with COVID restrictions and whatnot. But there's some hope that we might be able to swing something like that next year as it's wrapping up.
If I can mention, I saw a great film by John Bauermeister about this exact thing, and it was wonderful to watch how the farmers are now putting this into practice. And have you seen that, Adam? I don't know.
I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar with his work, so it definitely be something I'd have to look into and check out.
It's really, really worth watching because it's exactly on the subject. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Well, thanks for offering that. Let's see what else. Lots of assessment and monitoring within the water.
One last comment. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Is the idea of actually paying farmers, you know, providing incentives. It may not be cash, it might be, you know, tax relief, or, but actually incentivizing regenerative agriculture and building healthy soil. Please go ahead. I'm sorry, I've interrupted you.
No, not at all. I'm happy to have the back and forth. We're not working on anything directly there, but there's certainly an interest in how this all plays out with some of the state funders that we have, like the New York State Soil and Water Conservation Committee, who's kind of the pass-through for a lot of our state funding. So I know they'll be interested in it. I mean, that the Agriculture Environmental Management or AEM program is like an incentive-based program to provide, you know, those implementation dollars to help farms make those changes. What we're really hoping to do is show that there's a benefit to the farm itself in terms of soil health improvements, so that it's not looked at as something as being like prescriptive and asking them to be forced to do it in any way, but voluntarily because they see the benefit to, you know, the successful yields, all those type of things that can be tied into those type of changes. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of it and what the next steps are. One other thing I guess I would mention is we're doing a municipal officials day with some of the watershed municipalities. That's actually this Thursday. It's going to be up in Phoenicia if anybody's interested. If you go to the AshokanStreams.org website, we'd be happy to have anybody from the county legislature attend. It's going to look at one of the projects we put in to help with flooding issues on Phoenicia Main Street post 2010 and Irene and Lee floods. Related to the bridge right there. And then we're going to touch on some of the planning endeavors we've gone through with the towns up there to address flooding and whatnot and build better resiliency within the towns. Let me see what else is I going to mention. Oh, I didn't want to steal any Nick's thunder here, but we've also been talking with DOE about a tree planting initiative for our centered around Arbor Day next year. And we would be able to bring some funding to that as well to provide plant materials to the local communities that would be interested in participating. Those talks are somewhat initial right now, but we're pretty hopeful that we'll be able to pull something off for next year. We'll also be working on our updated AEM action plan, which will have additional implementation dollars over the next 2 years, so starting 2022, 23, to do some more on-farm practices. We're still identifying what those projects might be. And then I will be finalizing our action plan, which I've shared with this committee in the past, hopefully by the end of October. And we'll pass that along to Fawn, who can hopefully share it with you all. And other than that, staying busy, trying to stay out in the field as much we can, and watching the rain.
And what about from the remedial actions that you've taken in the upper Esopus? Is that, can we measure turbidity reduction? Either coming into the reservoir or going out of the reservoir. I've heard that we need to do, the number that was given to me was 6 times as much that it's effective, but for it to be fully effective. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we just want to be aware of, you know, your take on that.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. To answer the first part, yes, we can measure turbidity, and there's currently a large study that DEP is funding through USGS, the Geologic Survey, who has authored some initial reports through monitoring our projects over the last several years that has shown a statistically significant reduction under a range of flows as a result of the stream projects. So I think in terms of quantifying like the whole load, it's possible just because of the gauging network up there, and they're looking at, you know, the load to the reservoir. There's a gauge at Colebrook right at the upstream end of the reservoir. And then we're looking at the sub-basin all the way down to like the reach scale, which by reach scale, I mean like something that's fixable through these type of engineered projects and solutions. That is going to look at about, I think it goes for about 5 more years with this. There's a report that was just published that looks at the results over the first 5 years. After the 5 years, they'll process another round of data because we've done these projects up in the Stony Clove Basin. We have the two that I mentioned earlier, and then another one on the Stony Clove Mainstem next year that were identified through that monitoring effort. And then we're going to look at the effectiveness of these projects at reducing it on those different scales. So there's already a lot out there that USGS has done in terms of monitoring within the watershed. So I think, to your second part of the question about whether or not more could be done, yeah, I think, you know, our assessment and monitoring has shown that there's plenty of sites that are worthy of treatment. We can kind of prioritize those based on the assessment data we collect. And we know there's spots that, you know, the Christmas or December 24th storm this past year, you know, opened up a lot more that, you know, maybe wasn't initially on our radar from the last time we'd done the assessments, because those are really snapshots. But you know, DEP has seen the value in increasing our funding. We're on 5-year agreements with them. And I think we're on our third one now. And every cycle has gone up pretty significantly. I mean, to the tune of, you know, a couple million dollars in additional funding for each five-year agreement. So I think they've shown a commitment to it, but obviously, you know, there's more capacity that could be built up there, and we could do more of these type of projects and hopefully have an impact on water quality, especially with regard to turbidity. And, you know, that impact would, it could potentially extend to the lower Esopus in terms of the releases. So obviously the cleaner water we can keep in the reservoir, the better it's going to be for the lower Esopus communities when releases do have to happen under their restrictions from the state and whatnot. So.
Any other questions or comments for Adam before we move on? Thank you. This has been very informative. And, you know, as we look through the budget, we have a sense of how that correlates to the plan. So we're appreciative.
Thanks. And I do, like I said, I appreciate the opportunity. And now that you remind me, there's one thing I wanted to say to the committee was that we did, for 2020 and 2021, we had received a third of our budget was cut as a result of the issues with COVID and where that budget would be. We did just put in our request for 2022 funding and ask for a restoration to our pre-COVID level, which I think is about $91,500. So just so you all are aware, that was just sent in last week, I believe. No.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm almost always available via email or phone calls. If anybody has any questions that come up after this, please don't hesitate to reach out. And thank you again for the opportunity.
Thanks, Adam.
Happy well, everyone. I'll probably stick around for a little bit, but I'm going to have to run at some point.
Awesome.
Okay. Next on the agenda is the UCRRA update. But Fawn, you heard from Tim McGrath that he couldn't make it this evening. You're on mute.
Sorry. Yes, he couldn't make it this evening, and he sends his apologies. Something came up with his children. But I've asked him in the future if he can't come to please send, you know, someone else from his board. But he did send us their the letter for the net service fee, which I emailed to all of you. It's also on the OneDrive for tonight, and I think their budget proposal for next year was in there too. So,
and I believe they had a public hearing on that budget proposal this afternoon or noon today.
They've been copying you on their committee information too. So they've been doing a good job of that since we asked.
Great. Any comments that we should get back to the RRA on the budget or other matters?
Well, I think they should be charging the full cost for their tipping fee. In their highlights, they did mention that it went up 88 cents, I think, for disposal and a dollar something for transportation. And, you know, again, 12% of the garbage that comes in is from municipalities and the rest is private haulers. So we're subsidizing the private haulers, you know, and, you know, it's great if they have that extra money in their reserves, they should keep it there because they're going to have to site either a landfill or an incinerator, and they should be holding on to those funds. And I believe the net service fee, they stated that they didn't need it as long as flow control was in place.
Anything else regarding the RRA? Okay. Let's see. Soil and Water, UCRA. I don't see Dave Haldeman from the Environmental Management. And we could go to resolutions. We have a resolution pending, and I would ask for a motion to discuss the resolution. I see that the legislative attorney and also Dr. Wright and Nick Vazda are here.
I'll make a motion to for discussion for resolution 462.
I'll second
it. All right. And just for the record, that resolution is to set a hearing on proposed local law number 8 of 2021, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster, chapter 304, solid waste, article
4.
food waste prevention and recovery in relation to composting, and that would be held on November 16th if the resolution passes. And the reason that I've been kind of urging us to consider this is that then we would have time to vote on it in December, if it gets that far, so it would be ready to be implemented. And I'd like to start, Victor, would you want to just go over the recommended changes in the amendment, and then we'll hear from Nick and Deputy Wright. I'm sorry, and I don't mean to catch you off guard. We have it in front of us, but I didn't know.
Chairwoman, can I ask just for a point of clarification?
Yes.
What we're talking about tonight is simply setting up a public hearing, correct? We are not actually talking about the resolution itself. So I always recommend when we're doing that to actually discuss the public hearing side of it and not the entire resolution, because that I just think that's expedient, because what we're voting on is actually a public hearing.
I'd like to second what he's saying as well. This is just a public hearing we're voting on, not the whole resolution.
I agree, and your points are well taken. The modifications in this amendment are very few. It's only striking a few lines. And I do think that the memorandum from the Department of Environment is important even in deciding whether or not we want to set a public hearing. We may not even want to do that. If you would bear with us.
Fair enough.
Okay, so Victor, are you in a situation to read the few lines that would be stricken, and if you can do that.
I am not right now. I'm currently driving, but I can do so as soon as I get home. I will listen if somebody has access to the resolution and can read the lines.
Madam Chairman, I can read them if you like.
That would be very helpful.
In section 1F, we're removing the words. There's a line that says this article will remove food waste generated on an annual basis from the waste stream incrementally from generators by January 1st, 2024. From that sentence, it removes the words producing 2 tons per week to 0.5 tons per week. The next change is in section 2, 304-5, requirements for large food scrap generators. We're removing the paragraph D that talked about beginning on January, this entire thing I'm reading is being removed. Beginning on January 1st, 2022, the requirements of paragraph B of this section shall not apply to any designated food scrap generators regulated under section 272203 of the Environmental Conservation Law. It shall apply to persons, businesses, institutions, and entities not subject to regulations under section 272203 of the Environmental Conservation Law. All of that will be removed.
I think that's
Sorry, while we're on that, can I ask what that means? So why was that removed? What are the implications of removing that?
Thank you, Peter.
Let me give my explanation, then I really would like to turn it over to the Department of Environment. If you recall, the last amendment to this law was proposed for many reasons, but primarily because of COVID, and their staff had to be redirected and did a spectacular job. But then we got feedback from the UCRA and others that, you know, we were dragging our feet and we needed to implement. So there's a balancing act going on. Basically, my interpretation is that when we passed this law, we did a lot of stakeholder outreach and tried to make this law as sound as it could be, given what we knew. We also knew that in 2022, New York State was going to create a law that would go into effect in 2022 that would have similar requirements, but was not quite as inclusive as our law. Our law applied to any larger generators in Ulster County, and it included schools and hospitals and medical facilities. Their law said that the generators had to be within, I think it was 25 miles, correct me if I am mistaken, Nick, when it's your turn. And those generators we assessed in Ulster County that the processing facilities, with the exception of the Route 28 corridor, were all within 25 miles of a processing facility, and we assessed that there was adequate capacity. But when the state law went into effect, and it starts at 2 tons a week or more, it had other conditions that ironically would exempt those larger generators. And so we wanted to take out the language that said, as of January 2022, go with the state law rather than the county law. That's a quick summary. And Department of Environment has a different take, and I wanted us to have a chance to have a conversation so we knew whether we wanted to move forward or not. Nick, do you want to summarize?
So, Matt, if it's all right, Nick has a pretty comprehensive update about implementation of the law, some really great productive discussions with the RRA, plans for implementation. Maybe I'll just quickly, more narrowly address these edits, and then let Nick give a lot more color to it with his updates, if that makes sense. And my apologies, it took until today to get an answer back from the county attorney's office, but I thought maybe I would just read to you what Kristen wrote, because with all respect to any attorneys present, sometimes attorneys phrase things in ways that are obscure to the rest of us. I think I understand what she's saying, and I believe she's essentially agreeing with Nick that there really isn't a need to make these updates to the law. So I think our recommendation is we don't need to go through that process. But what Kristen said is, this office has no legal opposition to the removal of the subsection D. Oh, by the way, she's just, I don't know what the purpose of the first set of language striking that Fawn read was. So this is to the second set of text that she read, which is that subsection D, which exempts businesses that are regulated by the state. So Kristen says, this office has no legal opposition to removal of the subsection D of section 304.51. Please note, however, that the county cannot regulate businesses that are already being regulated by the state. As of January 2022, New York State is assuming regulatory responsibility for businesses generating more than 2 tons of food waste, therefore preempting the county from regulating those businesses on this subject matter. Removal of the suggested language will not allow the county the ability to enforce its local law, where New York State is already enforcing state law. So I think what Kristen is saying, it really doesn't matter if we have this subsection D in, we won't be able to impose a different regulation on those businesses that are covered by the state law. I think what Nick is gonna tell you is that he thinks that this issue with the 25 miles and the capacity is a very temporary one at the state, and that we think we can work this year to get those numbers updated so that essentially we have the impact of the state law that we expect later on. But that deleting this language won't affect that, because we won't be able to enforce our law on generators that are regulated by the state, even if we don't like the way they are regulating them.
Legislator Bruno, I see your hand. I want to just say that when we were developing the law.
No, I'm actually just listening intently. I'm sorry, my hand is just holding my head.
I had just a quick question. And
somebody... May I just clarify one thing first? And that is that when we were developing the law, our attorneys asked the state about the question of preemption. And what we were told is that our law could be more inclusive or stricter under home rule. So,
That's exactly what I was just going to ask Legislator Green, was the home rule.
So my understanding is that the law can be more inclusive in terms of we can regulate additional entities that are not covered on the state law, but that we can't impose a different set of regulations on entities that are regulated by the state law. And so although this capacity issue will affect whether those state regulated generators have to compost their waste as opposed to donate the donatable portions of their waste, and you know, all of those ins and outs that we've been through, we can't, this is my understanding of what the county attorney's office has told us, we can't impose a different set of regulations on the same entities.
Right, so we
do whatever we like to the entities that aren't covered.
All right, so up the 2 tons and over is covered by the state. Under 2 tons, we can do whatever we want with.
Right.
So it's pretty much a no-brainer. So and I'm going back to the resolution, which is 462, which is just calling for a public hearing. And I think before we make any decisions on any of this, let's hear what the public has to say. And that being said, I'm gonna call for a roll on this 462, because we'll be here all night. That does really
can we just hear from Nick, or is that a different matter, Nick?
I can add a few notes on this topic, but I can also give you an implementation update for the law in general as well, if you'd like that.
Let's wait on that, because we're called.
Fair enough.
What I can add to the discussion is that the department has had some discussions with the DEC about how they've developed their methodology for determining which entities produce more than 2 tons of waste and which entities should be regulated under their law. And in general, the methodology we've used, the same methodology for the county law that the state is using, which is the Pollution Prevention Institute's calculations. Where the issue arose is when the state published their list in June of this year, which they will be doing annually in June each year. They had made a lot of assumptions around case by case basis, entity by entity, whether or not they had a facility within 25 miles or a facility that had capacity within 25 miles that could accept their specific estimated quantity of waste each week or month or year. So what they concluded is that they needed to have 2 tiers of regulation for each of these entities. One Well, first of all of the entities are regulated under the law, but some of them are required only to donate their food waste to other uses. And a smaller subset of that is required to actually recycle in the spirit of the county's law. That works out to be about 80% of the total number, which is 35 for this year. 80% of them are not required to recycle, and the rest are. So that's 6 out of 35 that don't have to under the law, even though they are regulated and they have to do annual reporting to the state about what they've done over the course of the last year, starting in 2022 or 2023. The discussions we've had with the state conclude that they're looking almost too closely, and that they're relying on some reporting from these food waste processing facilities that may not be correctly showing their full capacity. We've seen the line on the report that they're using for this. And we think that through some interaction with each of these facilities within the county and neighboring counties, that we can ensure that they're reporting the correct capacity to the state, so that the state can then broaden their net of those 2 ton per week generators that should be required to recycle as well. The other thing that they've done is remove certain entities that they think or have documented are already diverting their waste, and not included them on the required to recycle list. So that's another thing that we as the Department of the Environment can work with the state staff who are working on this law to make sure we know exactly which of those are falling into that case, so that we can intervene if needed, or make sure that those are on next year's list.
Nick, the 6 that are gonna be required to recycle, do you have their names in front of you?
Yes.
I wanted to see if they're the ones that are already recycling, or they are not already included on that list. I mean, if it's Mohawk Mountain House and SUNY Ulster, and they're already Hannaford, mm-hmm. they're already recycling.
Right. Yeah. So of the 6, we believe that 4 of those 6 are already recycling. So that's 2 locations for Hannaford Supermarket, Mohonk Mountain House, and SUNY New Paltz.
Okay. So this law really has no impact then this year if we pull out the other 80%.
Right. Except that those 29 entities will be required to donate their food under that tier of the law.
How does this affect the school systems?
I don't believe there are any schools on the list other than the higher education, so SUNY New Paltz.
And so the high schools, the grammar schools, all that food waste.
All gets thrown away.
Yep. That doesn't fall into it.
And these kids aren't even allowed to take extra home.
And there's like thousands and thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
Right. But it's a question of whether they generate more than 2 tons a week. They will definitely, in the Ulster County law, which has been approved by the state, they are included, where the state excludes schools and hospitals and healthcare facilities. We are allowed to include them under home rules or inclusive. So it's a question of this demarcation of greater than 2 tons a week. And the reason we wanted to take this essentially out of the state's hands and leave it as a comprehensive law for Ulster County is so that we didn't lose those 29 generators, whether or not they donate food waste. That's also in our hierarchy. I don't think the language is quite as strong as the state's, but we do set a hierarchy of reuse by humans or animals, before composting or anaerobic digestion. I just don't understand how we can implement our law in January if we don't go through this process. I'm trying to understand. I would be glad for us to set a public hearing and do our own legal checking. But it's up to the committee how you would like to proceed.
So my question is, we can still have a public hearing and continue the discussion even beyond the public hearing. So this resolution is just about the public hearing. We can hear that we might get some great ideas from the public. We don't know. We'll find out when we have the public hearing. As we discuss it further after the public hearing, we can make changes. That's what a public hearing is all about. We might get some great ideas from the public. And to that, again, and I appreciate Nick and Evelyn and everybody who's given their input, but this is the question is whether or not we want to hold a public hearing. And I'm going to call for the roll on this.
Okay. Given that you have done so, will the clerk call the roll on resolution number 462, please? For setting a public hearing.
You want to do a long roll? Is that it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Manna Joe?
Yes.
Mary Wuerow?
Yes.
Al Bruno?
Yes.
Peter Criswell?
Yes.
And Laura Petit?
Yes.
So the resolution is set a public hearing, passes 5-0.
And we'll do everything we can to answer any unanswered questions, whether they be legal or practical. Nick, you had other updates.
I'll give you an overview of where we are with implementing the 1 ton per week cohort, which will be newly regulated starting on January of next year. So we had a list of 28 entities that qualified for the greater than 1 ton per week, up to and including 2 tons per week of food waste produced. Again, from the Pollution Prevention Institute's methodology estimates. We've completed notification of those 28 with 3 months ahead of time of regulation per the law. We will follow up with those notification letters with our new environmental outreach manager, Mike Darcy, who started with the county today. And his task will be making contact with all of those within the next month to identify what their plans are and provide assistance as required. We've been doing some work with the dispute of status form and the waiver form that we expect many of these entities may provide to us to request those, either of those. And then we've had discussions with the Resource Recovery Agency about the reporting process for the law and for each of these entities that are regulated and how they will provide their annual report to the county about implementation of the law. The Resource Recovery Agency has agreed to incorporate those reporting lines into their annual, give you the correct word here, the annual waste and recycling report that goes out to pretty much 100% of these entities anyways to report their municipal waste and their recycling performance. So this will be an additional line, and we will add a notice to the report notice when it goes out at the end of the year to include organics reporting in their standard report that they send to the Resource Recovery Agency, which should reduce the amount of impact that it has on their operations. And the last, the next task that we'll tackle at the department prior to the end of November is fully defining what it is to complete a waste audit, because we expect that to be required to grant a dispute, to grant a waiver or approve a dispute of status. And that's something we'll be working closely with the Resource Recovery Agency on to define, and then using the Environmental Outreach Manager to communicate to each of these entities. I'll stop there for questions.
Well, I really want to thank you for doing that. Is there any progress, if I may ask, on resolving the question of enforcement? You may have said and I missed it.
As far as we've reached with the Resource Recovery Agency or we've gotten as far as reporting. So we're proceeding in line with how the state is regulating their law or implementing their law and using a voluntary reporting method to understand compliance. And at the end of February of next year, we will have a list of reports from these 22 entities, and we'll have missing reports from these entities, and we'll know who has complied and who hasn't. And that should help with determining what the next steps are.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I had a quick question. And this is to either Nick or Evelyn. I just wanted to find out who I would reach out to. I'm the representative from the Democratic Caucus for the ARP funds spending for food insecurities. And so I wanted to talk with whoever, I don't know who's on the committee from the executive team at this point, but I wanted to reach out to you to find out a little bit more about the programs that we have to recycle food and bring food into pantries and how that works and what the county already has in place and how we can shore that up with some of this funds.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. I'm really glad you're serving on that working group. Chris Kelly has been working through putting together meetings with the various working groups. He's out on a little post-budget recovery for the next couple days, but I think he's going to get back to putting those together. I think he's back Wednesday. So, I mean, the short answer is we discovered via Project Resilience that we don't have much formal in place. And so the thinking here was working with Cornell Cooperative Extension, who is also looking at shoring up their food systems work to support a position there or part of a position there to do that work in close collaboration with the county.
Well, that's great. Thank you. I'm really looking forward to working with you all on this.
I would also like to strongly recommend, there's an organization called Hudson Valley Eats, and they have vast amount of information on, for example, legislator Gavaris asked about expired foods, and that could be anything from, you know, bread or milk to chips and other snacks, and it could even be canned goods. And there are there is a law that allows for some of that to be reused, and that's up on the county website. There's a really good description, and I can forward that to you. But you know, that's going to come up under this food waste reuse that the state is requiring. But I do think we have to kind of get to the bottom of, you know, what the best next step is. But I'll send you, I'll do that introduction because I've been working on that over the course of this past week.
Great, great.
All right. Anything else from the Department of Environment? So let everyone know that the zero waste implementation planning process is still going on. We now have three sections fairly deeply researched and are hoping that we can work with Recycling Oversight Committee, particularly to look at C&D. Glass is well underway, and scrap metal. And the next one is going to be mattresses, and we have quite an extensive list. But I did want to let you know that's continuing. And then under new business, there is a solar mapping project. We've been talking about mapping, and some communities have had some conflict about solar farms or larger solar facilities, even community solar. So Scenic Hudson has an excellent solar mapping tool, and starting October 14th, I think there are now 15 municipalities that are going to participate in a sort of a training. We're going to use that tool. And several of them are from Ulster County, Marbletown and Rosendale. And right now I'm not clear about who the others were. I could pull up that list, but Denning, which is going to be very interesting. And then around the seven county region, Cortland, Ossining, and a bunch of others. If anyone's interested, I can let you know, but we're planning to do this four times a year so that more and more municipalities will know where in their community is good to ideal for solar, where is not so good or really needs to be avoided or protected. And sometimes there are combinations of that. And where are areas that would be good if the grid were extended and they could interconnect. So that process is going on. And, you know, I encourage you to, if your municipality is not participating, let them know about it. I can be sure and send the invitation so you can share that with your municipalities. It's kind of hoping Saugerties, Saugerties is kind of leading Ulster County in terms of solar development, but I think it'd be great to do this mapping exercise. And I did reach out a little bit to some of the key people there. It's not too late if Saugerties wanted to join. We're starting on October 14th, and there's a video to watch ahead of time. But I think that's the first step in really ensuring that we meet the goals of the Climate Action, CLCPA of the Climate Act, which are very aggressive, 70% renewable by 2030 and 100% by 2040. It's a vast amount and we each have to do our share. So it looks like that's well underway. And there are two resolutions in the packet for discussion. I'm not sure how far we want to go with that. One has to do with climate impact assessment, and the other has to do with, you know, suspending the use of fossil fuels. Moving forward. And we do not need to discuss them there right now. They don't have numbers yet. I just think it's really important that each of us ask those climate impact questions, because we don't want to be using public funds for projects that are going to ultimately worsen the climate crisis. We want to at least ensure that the impact is neutral, if not beneficial. Yes, please. Go ahead.
Al. Oh, I'm sorry. I was muted. On these two, as far as the climate impact assessment, I think it's a good idea. I see no problem with, you know, looking at whatever we do in relationship to how it affects the climate and how it affects how we're doing things. However, the fossil fuel impact, yeah, I don't think we're there yet. I think.
Somehow you hit the button and you're mute. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I realized that afterwards. As far as the assessment process of county projects to make sure that they're ecologically sound, I'm okay with that. And I think that's a good thing to move forward. However, prohibiting the installation of any systems that utilize combustion of fossil fuels, I don't think the technology is there yet. And in reality, I think fossil fuels, gas particularly, is in a lot of ways is still the most sound way to go, given the technology that we have today. And prohibiting that is handcuffing us in a lot of ways. I can tell you, I mean, I come from the combustion industry. This is who I am. I think that it's a little short-sighted at this point in where we're going. You can't cut off your nose to spite your face. And I understand where you're coming from. I think in thing that we've got history, but right now it's something that we need to rely upon. And I think we can rely upon making it more efficient, but not obsolete at this point. There's a lot of science involved here, and to ban fossil fuels outright is short-sighted, I think, at this point, on all new county, because we don't have the technology. Solar can't do it all. Geothermal is electric. It's just kicking the can down the road. And the electric is generated by fossil fuels for the most part. In some cases, coal, which is probably the dirtiest way of producing energy that we ever could have think of. We're just pushing it in someplace else. And I'm not in favor of that part of it yet at this point, if that makes any sense. And I hope I did.
Legislator Criswell.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this, but I think I don't want to talk about it until I actually see the language of each of the resolutions to see exactly what they're saying. And then I think we can have a substantial conversation around it. The other thing I'm going to ask, if it's okay with you, Chairwoman, I actually have another board meeting that I'm supposed to be at right now. Since we voted on the resolution, may I be excused?
You may be excused, and we're going to wrap up. I have just one last comment, but you go to your other board meeting.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a long day, and it's going to continue on until about 9 tonight. So I just got to keep cruising. All right. Thank you.
My comment is that if we're going to be switching to beneficial electrification, which is mainly electric vehicles and ground and air source heat pumps, and of course the energy efficiency insulation that goes with that, and the trend is in that direction, I feel very strongly that we have to get that infrastructure in place, get the renewable energy infrastructure in place ahead of, you know, both are moving forward, but we want to be sure that the renewable energy generation and storage systems exceeds the beneficial electrification. Otherwise, that is going to mean burning more fossil fuel. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons that we're pushing so hard to get communities to map their solar and other renewable potential and send those signals to the developer.
And if I can, Matt, I agree with you completely. I'm sorry, I don't mean to, you know, jump, but I agree with you. But again, we don't want to put the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
So this particular discussion about prohibiting, flat out prohibiting fossil fuels on any county building at this point is premature, I believe. I mean, I agree with you. I think that's the way we're going in the future, but we're not there yet. And to flat out put a prohibition on any new buildings and using fossil fuels is just short-sighted, I think, at this point. When we get the infrastructure there and we can do it reliably and economically and ecologically sound methods, then I'm all for it. But I think at this point, it's short-sighted. I think it's premature at this point to come forward with this kind of a resolution.
Okay, and it's still just for discussion. So thank you. Any other old business, new business, anything else that we need to cover tonight?
I'd like to make a motion. We adjourn.
Okay. I think we've covered most of the items on the agenda. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor, please signify.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And is Laura still here? We have a quorum anyway, but
we can't. And happily, you don't need a quorum to adjourn.
Okay. All right. This meeting. That one. And thank you all for your participation. And discussion is to be continued and resolved in the best possible way. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.